Hey, this is Robert Gibson of the Rock and Roll Express. When I'm around, I listen to the Double Dropkick Show.
Hey, welcome to the Double Dropkick Show. I'm Heath Mulliken.
I'm Mark Whitman.
And on today's episode, we want to talk about what if Shane Douglas hadn't thrown down the NWA title? Before we talk about it, we want you to hear from the man himself, and I'm going to send you to this week's gimmick table. Tell them what's on the gimmick table this week.
This week, once again, this is a couple in a row from the fine folks at kayfabecommentaries.com. They're going to need to start paying us for this. Timeline, the history of ECW 1994 as told by Shane Douglas. I liked it. I liked it some things and I didn't like others. I think I was hoping for some dirt.
Right.
And he doesn't really spill a lot of dirt, but that's not the point of these timeline.
Right. Right.
Things. They're more of just a, laying it out, kind of here's what went down. And actually, they're off subject, but they're fixing to start a new one with Jim Cornette that they're going to do about the territory. That he's going to host and talk about each territory. So I'm looking forward to that. This one, much like the Jim Cornette breaking kayfabe, if you're interested in Extreme Championship Wrestling as it morphed out of Eastern Championship Wrestling and became Extreme, I would highly recommend this because it's the guy, Shane Douglas, that threw the NWA title down and proclaimed it Extreme Championship Wrestling.
Right.
And it all happened this year in 1994.
Right.
And he goes into the whole story about, with Dennis Curluzzo and how they put this tournament together and how they didn't tell him what was going to happen. And then as it happened, they still started working him and even had him cut a promo for ECW television.
Yeah.
They double-crossed Dennis Curluzzo.
Right.
And talks about Terry Funk coming in and, Sandman. He tells a good story. Go ahead, ask me what you want.
What I was going to ask you, I've never heard Too Cold Scorpio's side of the story. He's the one that Shane Douglas beats in the finals of that tournament that's supposed to be for the NWA title.
Right.
Does he talk about any of that?
I mean, he may, but it's not anything that stood out for me as, as a big deal. The one thing that I found most interesting, Ric Flair shoots it down. Ric Flair says it's not true.
Yeah.
I don't know that I believe it.
Right.
I kind of think what they're saying here is true. If, Arn Anderson came into ECW with Bobby Eaton for a couple of shows. And at the time, Ric Flair was having some contract disputes with them.
Yeah.
And Shane Douglas's story is that really Bobby Eaton and Arn Anderson were there just to check ECW out and see if things didn't work out with Flair in his contract negotiations, if he could have come in and done a series of three matches with Shane Douglas.
Wow.
That would have one in Charlotte and then one up around Philly. And then the third match, which would have been the final match that Flair would have went over in, would have been at a big arena. And they were going to pay Ric Flair a lot of money. I mean, six figures for three matches. Is it true? I don't know.
Right.
And he talks about, because he took a lot of criticism for the way he's talked about Flair over the years, but his take on it was, it's really how I felt, but I was working towards that match.
Yeah.
And then when I found out we weren't going to do the match, you didn't hear him talk about Flair much more after that. He kind of left it alone until he got to WCW, and that's his take on it. He said, when I was saying all that stuff about Flair, it was to set up him coming in to ECW for those three matches.
That would have been huge.
Is it true? I don't know. Would it have happened? I don't know.
You talk about those three matches. Fans, if you haven't listened to our episode, Blood and Wrestling, Mark tells you the origin of the three-match series. That's all I'll say. Anything else on this DVD that stands out to you?
No, that was it. Other than just talking about having the first triple threat match.
Right.
At least in the U.S. Having that first match and just thoughts on that. I would give it, I'm going to be honest with you, a lot like the others. If that's very interesting to you, I'd probably give it a three chair shots.
Right.
Out of four.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not interested in ECW, I wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, obviously, you're not going to get it if you're not. If you don't like Shane Douglas, you know what kind of personality he got.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't get it.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you want to know from the guy who was there about the night he threw the NWA title down, there's not a better interview out there than this one.
Now, in terms of the timeline of 1994, what month was it that he throws the title down?
I can't remember.
Okay.
I can't remember.
Well, anyway, there you go. That's this week's gimmick table from Kayfabe Commentaries, the timeline history of ECW 1994 with really the man, the franchise, Shane Douglas. So go check it out. Click on that banner. And that's this week's gimmick table. All right, Mark. In 1994, there was this promotion, Eastern Championship Wrestling, part of the National Wrestling Alliance. And in August of that year, they're going to do a tournament. The NWA is trying to regain its prestige. Mm-hmm. Because between Turner dropping the NWA in 1994, I don't know, it's a couple of years, what happened in the NWA in that time period?
I know that...
nothing.
Yeah, nothing. Yeah. I was trying to come up with an answer. So I thought, man, what a question to ask me. Were they going on? Heck, I don't know.
Nothing. So they're doing this tournament.
I was going to make something up, boy. And it was going to be good. it was going to be good. You should have let me roll with it.
So they're going to do this tournament. Shane Douglas is going to be the champion because at that point, if I'm not mistaken, Eastern Championship Wrestling, run by Todd Gordon and a young guy named Paul Heyman, Eddie Gilbert was probably the most prominent of the NWA territory.
Yeah, I think as prominent as you can be. I mean, you know what I mean? But where they made the mistake, Dennis Carluzzo, man, he went on to Mike Tenay's radio show a few weeks before the tournament, and he was running Shane Douglas down because he wanted to put the word out to other promoters not to hire Shane Douglas. Mm-hmm. And Shane Douglas found out about it. And that led us to the infamous night where he had to make a decision between going with the old guard or the new guard.
Paul Heyman has said it, you know, that he had a choice. He said, you can be a part of something or you can be the something. And that his goal with ECW was to be a global brand, and he didn't feel like he could do that with the NWA. So they hatched this plot. Shane, you're going to win the match, trash the title, and launch the new ECW.
Right, rebranded as Extreme Championship Wrestling.
And instead you're going to be... You're going to be its world heavyweight champion.
Right.
And he cuts an amazing promo and just swerves everybody except for him and a few people in the building.
Yeah.
And even as he's cutting the promo, running down the NWA, Todd Gordon is there next to Carluzzo. Yeah. You could see these guys on the side. And Carluzzo's like, what is he doing? Oh, no, it's all right. It'll be all right.
And then got him backstage and convinced Carluzzo that it was all a big work and got him to cut promos about how Shane Douglas was the NWA champion. And he was going to defend it in all the territories. And he didn't have a choice. And they just made a fool out of Carluzzo.
Yes. So what if... August 94, Shane Douglas pins Too Cold Scorpio and keeps the NWA title.
Wow.
How, 20 years later, how different is the wrestling business today?
Oh, man, I think very, well, let me rephrase that. I think it wound up where it would have been anyway.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's kind of funny, but there was this big high that hotshotted like an entire era and generation. And a lot of that was copying ECW's ideas.
Yeah.
And having the money and the talent to really do what they were trying to do on a grander scale. And when they would introduce new cutting edge acts, that people would just swoop in and take them.
Yeah.
You know, and pay them to go do their thing somewhere else. I mean, you just, as far as what would have happened if he had won, I think the NWA would be exactly where it's at right now.
Yes.
Which is, who's the NWA champion?
Right.
I mean, I have to Google it to find out that it's Rob Conway.
Yes.
And it may not even be Rob Conway anymore.
It is. He's supposed to be there because they're actually doing an NWA show, but it's about 3 hours away. And I seriously debated, is that worth a 3-hour drive to see a pretty good show? But just to see how much the NWA has changed since the last time I saw NWA at Greenville.
Right. So I think they wind up, NWA winds up exactly where they are now.
Totally.
I don't because that title at that moment had more worldwide attention than it has had since then.
Yes.
Really. And had for a few years.
Yes.
Before that, and they weren't able to capitalize on that.
Exactly right.
But without him doing that, there's no ECW, Extreme Championship Wrestling, and you just begin to think about all of this stuff that you got in 90s wrestling from ECW. I mean, you had, and I've said this, I think, to you, WCW was like country music, and WWF was pop music, and ECW just kicked the door down like Nirvana.
Yeah.
You know, and it was something, wow. Yeah. I mean, it was this grungy thing that you've never seen. It wasn't polished.
Nah.
Well, it was more polished than we realized.
Yes.
Honestly, it didn't seem polished, but you didn't realize that they had take a match and take out all the botches and all the, you know, and they edited around things that didn't go like it. So it looked like everybody was just this world-class wrestler, you know?
Yeah.
And there were a lot of world-class wrestlers
that
came through there. Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero came through there. Nobody cared about Dean Malenko before he went to ECW.
Nah.
And Eddie Guerrero had been in Mexico, and he had been in Japan, and he had had some success, but nobody in the United States was going to sign Eddie Guerrero.
Right.
And then they go to ECW, start having these incredible technical matches, and, I mean, they are some great, great matches. And Eric Bischoff says, hey, man,
I like
that. I want to bring these guys here. And he talks about it on his shoot interview that he was building because he knew that the Hogans and the Nashes and the Halls and the Lugers and the Stings were not going to have these incredible matches.
Mm-hmm.
But if he could put guys on the undercard that could have incredible matches, then it would be okay if they just had big angles. Because he knew that people would get sick of just seeing Sting with a baseball bat at the end of every show. But if you had really good matches as the foundation for that, it would be okay. And I think he was right to an extent. I remember watching WCW for a lot of the cruiserweight matches because I knew they were going to be good.
Because typically, on all the pay-per-views, it start out with a cruiserweight match.
Yeah.
But most of the Nitros, I don't remember Nitro starting. Maybe they did. But to me, Raw was more likely to start with a promo than Nitro.
Yeah.
Nitro was going to start with a hot match.
It gets you there. This is what we're doing to get you in the ring. Now, it seems like a lot of times, I don't remember, man, because I haven't been watching a lot of them on the network, but it might start with seeing Hogan and Hall and Nash walking in or something.
Right.
And then we would kick to a match. You know, it's kicking off the hour. But they wouldn't do their big thing till right at 9.
So, I don't want to jump too far ahead of what we want to talk about today. It seems to me, and maybe, and my memory may be fuzzy on this, it seems to me WCW stole more talent. Maybe stole is not the right word. Purchased more talent from ECW than WWF did. But as far as ideas, that's where WWF did a lot of copying.
Right.
Because WCW never really went that, because it was a corporate entity, didn't really go PG-14 or whatever as much as WWF did.
Yeah, and it's also interesting to note, I think, that the guys that WCW would take were Rey Mysterio and Psychosis had an incredible match in ECW where they brawled all over the arena, and they moved to WCW. And then Jericho comes in. He goes WCW. Guerrero, Malenko, all these guys who had had exposure in other parts of the world.
Yeah.
They went to ECW because Paul Heyman will put a show together like that, and then caught WCW's attention, and they poached him and brought him in. But when guys would leave WCW, they would go to ECW to rebrand themselves, to reestablish who they were, to work with Paul Heyman and learn that promo style. Mick Foley's promos from ECW, I would put those promos up against Dusty Rhodes, Ric Flair, anybody that you could, any great promo cutter that you can think of, I would put Foley's promos from ECW up against them as maybe the greatest promos ever. Yeah. That Kane Dewey promo and the everybody from Abdullah the Butcher to Larry Zbysko is, you know, the A to Z of professional wrestling has left a scar on my body.
Yeah.
Those things. I mean, he was cutting the anti-hardcore thing that he did where those, because he had such that hardcore reputation that he was this hardcore legend and icon. And then when he got there, he would grab a headlock and lay in the ring for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Just to infuriate the crowd.
Yeah.
That was genius to do that, to be a heel and to wrestle.
Yeah.
A technical wrestling match, a slower match to make them hate him. It was genius. Steve Austin goes and learns to cut. And I mean, he learned to be Stone Cold.
Yeah.
In ECW. So you see these new guys come there to get the attention of WCW. But when WCW decided they wanted to go with the Hogans and the Nashes and the Halls and the Stings, these other guys like Foley and Austin go to ECW, rebrand themselves, and then WWE picks them up based on what they saw, makes big stars out of them.
Right.
Where WCW missed the boat on them.
I feel like the last, and I watched this just I guess like watching a car wreck. I watched the last ECW pay-per-view.
Oh, man.
And they still had a few.
Wait, the last ECW pay-per-view or the last WWE ECW?
No. The last Paul Heyman ECW. The last real ECW.
Not that December to Dismember.
No.
Okay.
And it was the people that were wrestling on that show.
Yeah.
It was clear that, I mean, Paul Heyman, for the most part those years, had done a great job of somebody takes Malenko and Guerrero, he plugs somebody else into that spot.
Right.
And at that point in time, he got to the point where there wasn't anybody else to plug in.
No, everybody, right, yeah.
So the cupboard was bare.
Yeah.
You talked about how he helped Steve Austin become Stone Cold. Would you say that in wrestling, Paul Heyman is a guy that can take something that may have gone stale? Is he one of the best at kind of getting new life out of a character?
I think so. I think he's... I watched the Ladies and Gentlemen, My Name is Paul Heyman DVD, and there's a great scene, and I don't know if I've talked about this before. We talk about it so much, where I think it was Little Guido.
Mm-hmm.
Was just because they wanted to illustrate how Paul Heyman worked. Little Guido cuts his promo, and it's, you're going to show up at the arena, and I'm going to beat you up. And you know what I mean? It was just that he was going through the motions of cutting a promo, and Heyman says, no, here's what you do. He steps out, Heyman steps in front of the camera and delivers the promo as Little Guido.
Yeah.
And he tells him, here's where you want to emphasize this word. And he cuts this promo in Little Guido's character.
Yeah.
And he said, that's how I want you to do it.
Right.
Then Little Guido steps back in and cuts the promo the way that Heyman told him to cut it. And it went from being just really not even good.
Right.
To being
passable.
And man, that was a good promo. I mean, it wasn't Hard Times, you know what I mean? But it was a good promo. I mean, you could put it where you wanted to put it on the show and it do what it was supposed to do.
So let me ask
you. So he was great at accentuating the positives and hiding the negatives.
Yes, yes, very much so. I think that's one thing that's changed is I don't know that, you know, this was all happening in 94. I don't know that in 84 or 74 you had somebody like that, a director.
Probably not. I mean,
you either, a promo, he either got it or he didn't got it. There wasn't going to be somebody that stepped in and said,
didn't got it.
I mean, that to say, okay, say this word like this. Or maybe if a grizzled veteran took you under his arm and kind of showed you the ropes.
You know who cuts a good promo?
Who's that?
The Assassin.
Oh, yeah.
I watched him fire Assassin number two, who I heard was Nick Patrick, who is Jody Hamilton's son.
Uh-huh. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you didn't know? Yeah, yeah. Nick Patrick.
Now, which Assassin was Hercules Hernandez?
They were all two, but it was different guys. It was different guys who played it. That's like, that was the gimmick, that he was the Assassin.
They worked me.
Yeah, you didn't know that? No, they didn't work you. That was the gimmick.
I didn't know. No.
Yeah, like he was the assassin. Jody Hamilton was the assassin.
I didn't
number
know it was
one.
Different people.
And he would, like, he had assassin number two who was, he just
different
gave
people.
Him the job, and it would be different people. And this particular time.
So I'm sorry. So he's going to fire him.
So he fires him, and then he cuts this diabolical promo about how he told, you assured me you could handle this. And I left, and I come back, and you got beat. You don't deserve to wear that mask, and you don't deserve to be my partner. And then he beats him up, and he rips the mask off, and he goes, you know, now that's how you fire somebody or something. And it's just these diabolical promos that he can cut, man. I want an assassin mask.
I'm telling you, back in the day, not a lot of fluff to the assassins.
No, or the bolos. They were also the bolos in Mid-Atlantic, but.
I've never said this before. When I first started watching wrestling, my dad started watching it. I was kind of scared, but I was scared of the assassins because I thought, I mean, that guy was real to me.
Yeah.
He was real to me. And the way he talked, just like you said.
I don't know how we got off on that. I was just talking about promos, and I just wanted to give the assassins a shout out because I like them.
In ECW, some of the greatest promos ever came out of there. You talk about Stone Cold. He only wrestled a few matches.
Yeah, he didn't have many matches there.
But that's where Stunning Steve Austin became.
Yeah.
They called him
the Superstar Steve Austin.
Oh, my
God. And then he went on and did the Ringmaster
thing.
And then he became Stone Cold.
Let's talk about Shane Douglas.
Yeah. Yeah, the guy who launched this started out as a what if. And I think the what if that we're discussing is all of this stuff wouldn't have happened without an ECW.
That's exactly
right.
That's
the point, but go ahead. And
that is the point is if Shane Douglas does not throw down the NWA belt, ECW does not become extreme. It does not become a destination. It doesn't become that go-between place.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that.
Because it was a WWE developmental territory.
And I don't know. What if Stone Cold never taps in to Stone Cold?
Right. Stone Cold!
Go back to Shane Douglas. You talk about somebody that was vanilla. In his NWA WCW days, as a dynamic dude and tag team, he's mainly a tag team guy. But the franchise, one of the to me, and you've kind of brought me around on Shane Douglas. That's one of the best characters of the 1990s, if not ever.
Yeah, he was a great heel, and I told him that. I think you were one of the best villains. Of the 90s, man. I told him that. He laughed and said, thank you. I appreciate you watching me do it, man. I mean, we didn't have this huge, long conversation, just a few minutes. But that's what we talked about was him just being this great villain because he wasn't afraid to get the heel heat.
No, he wasn't. And that's missing.
Yeah.
ECW was the last place where there was heel heat.
You know, it's interesting. I was listening to Jimmy Jacobs talk about this the other day.
Okay.
I just found it interesting, man. They were asking about that because he works heel. And
yeah.
If you don't know who Jimmy Jacobs is, he's in Ring of Honor. He's like, he kind of does an androgynous type Adrian Street kind of gimmick. You know, is he gay? Is he not gay? And that's kind of his gimmick. You know, it's an androgyny thing. And it's a pretty cool gimmick. He's the zombie princess or something like that. Well, anyway, they ask him about that. And he said that you can't get heel heat anymore. You can't get real heel heat anymore because it's a different era. He said, you know, and I never thought about it this way before. Right. But so it was nice to hear somebody else's opinion on it who actually knows what he's talking about.
Right.
He said, now, you know, used to you get ready and every Monday night you go to Greenville. Let's say, and if they run you down, if the heels talk smack at you, well, you know that they're going to get what's coming to them. Even if it's not this week, before it's over with, they're going to get what's coming to them. It's next week, and you're into it, and it's part of the fun, and you're part of the show. He said, but now, if WWE only comes around once a year, and you have some girl that she buys her tickets 2 months in advance, and she's on Facebook talking about how excited she is to go, and all day long, it's, man, I can't wait for Raw tonight. I can't wait for Raw tonight. I'm looking forward to seeing this. And she goes out and buys her Randy Orton t-shirt. And then she gets to the arena and she spends a bunch of money when they get there. And then she comes out and a heel calls her a fat girl. He ruined her good time. Mm-hmm. Because she doesn't get the comeuppance of next week coming back and seeing him get what was coming to him. I never thought about it from that perspective.
Right.
That you almost can't be too offended. He said, you talk about a family. And the point being is that next time she doesn't come back.
Right.
She just says, man, I was so looking forward to this. And then they insulted her. Yeah. And now she just doesn't come back and spend her money on WWE anymore.
Right.
Well, if a family gets together and you take your three kids.
Yeah.
And a wrestler comes out and insults your children.
Right.
That he ruins your good time.
Right.
Probably not you, but
probably not me and my kids because my kids know when the wrestler talks to us, doesn't matter what he says.
Right.
That's good. We want him to talk to us.
Right, but not everybody.
Right.
It's like they're not going to see Raw. This guy a lot of times is not a fan like you.
Yeah.
He's taking his kids because they're fans.
Right. And they're like, oh, that's
and he's not really a fan. Yeah. And then somebody does, so then they don't come back next time.
Yeah.
Just an interesting perspective on that. I'm not saying I agree with it wholeheartedly, but it is an interesting perspective that I had not thought of.
Yeah, I mean, I think back to some of the angles in ECW that were long and drawn out. I think back to their first pay-per-view where Rick Rude had been wearing the helmet.
Mm-hmm.
And they think it's this guy, but it was Brian Lee.
Yeah, Bulldozer Brian Lee.
It's who they unmasked.
The Underfaker.
But then it was Rick Rude was one of the security guys.
Yeah.
That night. And I just thought the way that had played, I mean, there's just no angles like that.
No, they don't do angles anymore, man.
No.
They feud with one another, but I don't know, man. It's like nothing gets set up to be this long-term thing. That's why I'm a big fan of what I've seen with the Ring of Honor, Kevin Steen stuff, man. Yeah. I'll review the Descent into Madness DVD at another point. But let me just go ahead and talk about it. He does this whole deal where he turns on El Generico.
Yeah.
And it goes on for like a year, and there's this one steel chair that plays a part. Throughout that's the chair he hits him with to ignite the feud.
Yeah.
And they use the same chair with the same blood stains on it. It's the heart and soul of their feud is this chair.
Yeah.
It's the same chair that Generico holds in his hand and won't hit Kevin Steen because he still feels some friendship for him.
Yeah.
And it's the same one that he finally decides to wrap around Kevin Steen's head when he's finally had enough.
Yeah.
And it's the same one that they use in another angle where he writes Mr. Wrestling in blood on it, puts Jericho's mask on it, Generico's mask, to mimic the shirt that he's wearing.
Yeah.
And it's the same steel chair that Generico finally uses on him at the final battle.
Right.
And it's the same chair that they kept up with so it would have the blood stains on
it. Yeah, yeah.
That's a commitment to storytelling and to an angle. That And that's why I have decided, told you this, I've been very critical on the show of certain things.
Mm-hmm.
That was last season. I don't want to be the same thing all the time.
Uh-huh.
I would rather watch two vanilla midgets who go out and try and tear the house down to entertain people, even if it's not perfect.
Right.
It's not exactly what I would rather watch that than John Cena and Randy Orton swap finishers for 20 minutes again.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to watch John Cena and Randy Orton face one another again.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's Hell in a Cell.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's Last Man Standing. I don't care what it is. I do not ever care if I see John Cena and Randy Orton face one another again.
Yeah.
So I'd rather watch two vanilla midgets go out and try and tear the house down and do something that hadn't been done before.
Yeah.
Than watch two guys drawing a fat paycheck working lazy.
Yeah. 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 Just going through the motions.
Look, we're a couple of weeks out from Hell in a Cell. I know what's going to happen. They're going to swap finishers for 20 minutes. I don't have to watch it.
Yeah.
If I'm wrong about it.
Listen, I think this is actually airing after Hell in a Cell. So I think you're probably being prophetic.
Yeah, John Cena wins after they swap finishes for 15 minutes because he's got to get his heat back from the Brock Lesnar thing. So he wins, you know.
And
that's my prediction for
that. Do you think...
Ain't nobody going to bleed.
But would there be anything such as Hell in a Cell without ECW? Would there be tables matches? Would there be...
Tables matches? No. That's Sabu.
Would there be...
Well, yeah, that's from Japan. All that Heyman did was copy Onita from FMW.
Right.
So, with that stuff, that happened in Japan before.
Right.
Big Japan and FMW, they were doing all that stuff, the tables and the... They have some ridiculous stipulation matches over there. Cactus and Terry Funk had the King of Death Match tournament over there. I used to have that. I wish I still did.
Man, I can't watch that. I can't.
I know.
If you get into a ring and there's no ropes, and it's just barbed wire, or whatever. I don't know. I don't know.
To answer your question, yeah, I think there'd still be Hell in a Cell. Because cage matches, it was a natural progression from cage matches. And from my understanding, it was not, they didn't watch anything on ECW to get that idea. That cage was actually, they used a cage like that in Memphis, where it went all the way out. It didn't have the top on it.
Right.
But it went all the way out to the bear so they could brawl around the ring. And they just put a top on the old Memphis cage. So there's no... Don't you love it that I know more than you do?
On this subject? you and I both practice selective ignorance. And yours,
true.
Yours is about like a lot of current events.
Yeah, I don't care about that.
Like you don't even, yeah. Mine's about, other.
I was just kidding, man. I don't know more than you.
Listen. If you want to come in here and run your mouth, don't try to take it back. You're man enough to start it. I've been talking to Paul Heyman.
Where did this come from? Where has this Heath Mulligan been for the last year?
It's a new day. It's a new season.
Yeah, man, I tell you.
As we have been talking today, I think you're right. We didn't mention this. Jim Crockett had some involvement in that whole NWA thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're absolutely correct. I think it doesn't matter. For the NWA's perspective, whatever decision Shane Douglas made that night, the NWA's fate was the same.
Yeah.
I think Paul Heyman saw the writing on the wall. If he hitches ECW, the NWA, it's going to drag it down. So I think ECW would have met its demise, but much sooner.
Yeah, no doubt. It just wouldn't have been. You mentioned the tables thing. Sabu was breaking tables, and then Public Enemy took it and ran with it, and then the Dudleys took it and ran with it, and now everybody has tables. ladders and chair matches, which originally the Eliminators versus Sabu and Rob Van Dam was they started the tables, ladders, and chairs matches in ECW. I mean, it wasn't like they said, let's have a tables, ladders, and chairs match.
Right.
It was somebody introduced a table.
Yes.
Into the match, which was Sabu's thing. And then the next time it was, here's a chair. And then the next time they used a ladder. And then somebody said, well, let's just make them all legal so you can use tables, ladders, and chairs in the match. And they were really good matches. I used to have a compilation of just Eliminators versus Sabu and Van Dam in tables, ladders, and chairs matches.
Huh.
Because they built to it. It wasn't like I said, it wasn't like let's just have a tables, ladders, and chairs match. It was gradually over the course of the feud.
Yeah.
These items got introduced, and then WWE just flat out copied that.
Right.
With the Hardys and Edge and Christian, who were using the chairs, and the Hardys used the ladders, and the Dudleys used the tables.
Right.
And let's just flat out stole that idea.
Really?
Yeah.
Really. Let me ask you this. You said something interesting. You said, we're going to get these things and make them all legal. There was, to my knowledge, was anything ever right.
But that's the no.
There were no disqualifications.
They weren't.
Under the impression when you sent me the Guilty as Charged VHS pay per view, I was under the impression that what was different about ECW is every match was no disqualification.
Right, there were no rules or
that there was really no stipulations, except you had to pin the guy in the ring.
It's an interesting thing that they had going on.
But at that point in August of 94, had ECW gone extreme?
It had not advanced to that level yet where it was just anything goes.
And would there have been, if he doesn't throw the belt down, is there a little more pressure to stay status quo and not go extreme?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the renaming it Extreme was...
Yeah, that would not have happened.
Yeah, I mean, it just wouldn't have happened. And when you call yourself Extreme, you have to be Extreme.
Right.
But they were clear. I mean, early on, I mean, Sandman Cain and Tommy Cairo, and I mean, they were doing some hardcore stuff and some pretty brutal things, but it wasn't every match.
Yeah.
You know. And it never was every match.
No. I mean, there were some matches that were just good wrestling.
Yeah.
That didn't, and again, that was the genius of Paul Heyman. He did a good job. And again, I think Monday Nitro tried to copy him. He had good matches. And if you go back, and watch the ECW TV from that era, that's good TV.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. It's good. I used to get all those tapes. Once a month, I got a tape with 4 episodes on it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, were they, you didn't have an inside guy. Was it somebody taping them off of TV, or was it somebody?
No, I was getting them from the guy who handled their merchandise.
Ah.
RF Video. I mean.
Gotcha.
You know, it would just, once a month, it was like $10, $15, I don't remember. But, I mean, I'd get a tape a month that had 4 episodes on it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And see, I think to me.
And then he shot handheld.
Yeah.
He would show up to most shows and he would shoot. And that's why you see ECW footage on DVDs that are non-WWE today. It's all that handheld footage that he shot.
A lot of that's on the High Spots TV.
Yeah, that's right.
It just says ECW fan cam.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. I think there were even some production things they did in ECW like that that have been copied and stolen. I just think once they make the break from the NWA, it's like Paul E., the chains are off. And he is able to fully realize his creative potential, his vision, and his dream.
And he was able to, Bischoff said in his shoot interview, he said that, Heyman was able to get away with stuff that WWE and WCW couldn't have got away with, like using music.
Yes.
He said he got away with it because he was off the radar.
Right.
We couldn't have done that in WCW. And he said, he's right, when you can use popular music to get somebody over.
Yes.
When everybody loves the song Enter Sandman and you're able to play Enter Sandman.
Yeah.
For his entrance, and the Natural Born Killers song that New Jack comes out to and play it on a loop through his match and made it like an extended action sequence in a movie. And, you know, Raven and Tommy Dreamer would come out to Alice in Chains, Man in the Box, and Shane Douglas. I forget his song. It was like an ELO song or something. It wasn't like a popular
song.
I forget the name of that song. But when you can use real music to get guys, and that's what I hate about watching it on the network.
Yeah.
When Sandman's coming out, like, the best thing about him was his entrance.
Yeah.
And he would tell you that. But the entrance was phenomenal. He's probably got the greatest entrance of everybody except Undertaker.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, everybody would agree Undertaker's got the greatest entrance.
Yeah, bar none.
But Sandman's got to be number two or three.
He's right up there.
It's an incredible entrance, man.
And to be honest, showed more skill in his entrance.
Right. Yeah, he's not a technical wrestler by any stretch.
Let me ask you this. We've talked about a lot of the guys that passed through ECW. The guys that Guerrero, Malenko passed through WCW. We talked about Foley and Austin, WCW, ECW, and W. Who are some of the guys from ECW that if it doesn't go extreme, if Shane Douglas doesn't throw the belt down, we've never heard of, they never make it to WCW or WWE?
I think Taz is probably a big one because before that he was the Tasmaniac.
Yeah,
he was the Tasmanian Devil. Was what, you know what I mean? It was, he had fur on his suit and he had long hair and he would come out and wore no shoes and he spun around and bounced around like the Tasmanian Devil. Yeah. Probably the Dudleys. I don't know that the Dudleys would have gotten a look from anybody. Even though I've heard that on the indie scene they were really good.
Yeah.
Bubba's weight, where he was about 400 pounds when they first started, he's way down on his weight.
Oh, yeah.
I think that would have kept him out.
Dude, now those guys, I don't pause right there. Those guys in ECW knew how to get heel heat.
Oh, man.
They were phenomenal.
They were good.
And they had Gertner and Sign Guy Dudley and...
Big Dick Dudley.
And Spike Dudley and Jimmy Jack Dudley. And
Dances with Dudley.
Giant Machine Dudley.
Yeah.
All right, so Dudley's...
I don't know who Dudley is. The Dudley Rider. The Midnight Dudley.
The Yellow Dudley.
Yeah, the Yellow Dudley.
Curry Man Dudley. Well, who are some other
Dudley
guys?
Number one and Dudley number two.
who are some other guys that you don't think would have gotten?
Oh, man. It's hard to say Sabu. I think definitely Sandman wouldn't have made it anywhere else.
Right.
Tommy Dreamer probably would have. He's a good-looking guy. I don't know that he would have been a big star, but I think he would have probably made it somewhere.
I mean, he never really... No disrespect. Tommy Dreamer was super nice to us. For the tent. So I mean, no disrespect. But, like, he's done a pretty good job of milking...
He's a real creative guy.
Oh, what I mean is his run in ECW is, as far as ECW runs, he was there from the beginning.
Right. But you also have to understand he was the guy that was writing that show.
Really?
Yeah. Him and Paul Heyman wrote the ECW show.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so he got a job doing creative in WWE because of his work in ECW.
So there's more
of a contribution there than just what he did.
Okay. So his main contribution really are off screen more than
Yeah.
I'm just saying. I guess his
he was the heart and soul of ECW. That feud,
right, even
the feud
his
with Raven,
was
incredible.
And I don't know that happens if Shane Douglas keeps the belt.
No, it doesn't happen.
I'm just saying, I mean, I am blown away at how, what, it would just be a completely different product. I don't know the product's different, Because I think WWE did the Attitude Era to kind of, that's what people were wanting. But they've ended up right where they were when that started.
Yeah, they're right back to normal. They hot-shotted for a couple of years, and now they're right back to where they were before, which is boring and nobody cares about it.
So, our answer is, what if Shane Douglas had not thrown down the NWA title? The answer is, WWE basically doesn't change. They're right back where they were.
Right.
A lot of guys don't have the careers or get the shot that they did because they don't...
True.
They don't come under the tutelage of the mastermind, Paul Heyman. But let me ask you this. What's the next thing? As ECW was from 94 to 98 that kind of raised the bar or raised the temperature of wrestling. What can happen today? I know what I think, but I want to know what you think. What could happen today to make, to raise the temperature, raise the bar of wrestling?
I think the only thing that's going to... You mean to force WWE to change a little bit? And
yes.
Okay, I think... I don't know that they ever will change.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're the circus, man.
Yes.
So I don't know that anything is ever going to happen that's going to spark this big wrestling boom. Okay?
Right.
But if we're just talking about what if, in a few months, New Japan's going to put on a pay-per-view
mm-hmm.
on American television with American announcers. If it is well-received and they can get a TV deal and some guys not just be Japanese wrestlers, because I think there's going to have to be some Americans. And they've positioned themselves with the AJ Styles and the yeah. Bullet Club.
Yes.
There's going to have to be some Americans involved mm-hmm. so that somebody can talk that we can understand and we can pull for. And, you know, if you have that and it is well received, and a lot of people start saying, this is what I've been looking for.
Yes.
I want to see this kind of hard-hitting action. Then it probably would force WWE to change a little bit about their in-ring stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that's going to happen. I think the better scenario, or the more likely scenario, is that TNA goes the way of the Dodo. The Global Force thing is, I think, probably going to be a little bit more New Japan and
mm-hmm.
Some of the Mexican promotions all coming in. And then some of the guys like Samoa Joe, who I don't know, is health-wise, I don't know where he's at.
Yeah.
Some of those guys kind of moving over and just taking over the TNA audience.
Yeah.
But being a better show.
Right.
That's what I think happens. I think WWE keeps doing what they're doing.
Right.
That million and a half people start watching New Japan / Global Force / AAA, whoever.
Yeah.
He gets involved with all that. I hope that he's successful.
Yeah.
The 10 years of the, which I don't blame everything in TNA on Jarrett.
Right.
Because Dixie Carter, once she took over,
yeah.
it was her show, man. And
yeah.
they weren't, and if he's smart enough to stay away from Vince Russo.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know that it...
I saw Russo...
I think he will be now because yeah. he's not going to be the center of the promotion. So he doesn't really need... The whole deal with Russo, and you know, Jerry Jarrett and Jeff Jarrett haven't spoken like 10 years over
yeah.
Vince Russo.
Yeah.
So not only did he kill a couple of wrestling companies, he killed a father and son's relationship.
Yeah. I saw a video on Facebook of Russo at a local show in New York. And I guess it was the final angle, and he was... But it was terrible. It was like, you know, not a bunch of people there. And they didn't even have a mic. He was on a little bullhorn. But it wasn't yeah. like the real bullhorn. It was the little bitty. It was pretty bad. It was sad.
It's not sad. He's where he needs to be.
Well, yeah.
He's not even where he needs to be. He needs to be as far away from real wrestling as possible.
Right.
We had this conversation with somebody on the internet the other day about... Or I did.
Yeah.
With Michael Hofer. I mean, yeah. I'll say it because we're friends.
Yeah.
I mean, but he's like, you can't dismiss him as an idiot. And I mean, I can't.
Yeah.
I really can dismiss him. And yeah. I mean, I understand that we're talking about him. So clearly he had a few good ideas.
Yeah.
Because we're talking. I don't want to get off on Vince Russo here.
Yes, please, no.
But he had a few good ideas, but everybody tends to agree he knows nothing about the wrestling business.
Yeah.
If he knew something about the wrestling business, with all of the talking and drumming up of interest about himself that he's done lately, he'd have a job.
Yes.
And he doesn't. So that lets you know that he doesn't know anything and nobody takes what he says seriously. Why? I don't even want to talk about Russo.
No. All right. Here's what I think. This is what I hope happens in WWE. Instead of Cena and Orton, they're just going through the motions. I really hope that NXT is the future.
I do too.
I've never watched. I mean, the episodes of NXT that I have watched are highly entertaining. Very good.
Yeah, matches. I enjoy them. Yeah.
Very good storylines. I've heard, and you've probably heard.
I think I was wrong about Prince Devitt, too.
What do you mean?
About him coming out in white trunks and everything.
Right.
I think I was way, way off base with that.
I think. So I like to me. I think Triple H is moving more in that direction. So I mean, if you're telling me, hey, the guys that are on NXT now, they're going to take Cena and Orton's place.
Yeah, I got no problem with that.
I'm like, please,
yeah.
Please,
yeah, that'd be good.
So for me, the next revolution is we've never really had in WWE. Like, tell me, who's the great Khali in Ring of Honor? The big guy that can't work, can't talk, can't do anything.
Yeah, I don't.
Because if you can't, they have no place for you. They can't pay you, you know?
Right.
So I'm looking for, it would be nice to see a WWE roster where people aren't on there just for their character.
Right. And I like when I watch NXT that there are guys on there that are there to get beaten by other guys. When I see Mojo Rawley come to the ring,
right.
He's not winning.
Right.
Somebody's beating him to get over.
Yeah.
That's what you got to have there. I don't see a lot of 50-50 booking on NXT.
Nah.
This guy's going up the ladder. This guy's going down.
Yeah. And they call it a job. You're getting paid.
Right.
Wrestling's not about winning and losing. Wrestling's about making a living.
Right. Yeah, so I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. That even Stephen Booking doesn't get anybody anywhere.
Right.
When Cesaro and Sheamus and Miz and Ziggler are all feuding and a different one wins every week, who gets elevated in that?
Nah.
All you wind up with is four guys nobody cares about.
Right.
Whereas if somebody comes out of that as a clear winner, they're elevated.
And that was the beauty of ECW.
Yeah.
If guys got in a program with each other, when the program was over, most of the time, everybody got elevated. But there was always a winner and a loser.
Yep.
And I miss that.
I miss that too.
About wrestling. And Paul Heyman, love him or hate him, the guy, I don't know that he's on the Mount Rushmore of wrestling bookers if you go back in time, you know, and you're talking about all time. He very well could.
Yeah, I don't know, Heath. He might be, because that's, I mean.
But if you go back to guys like.
Well, yeah, you start
getting
into,
when the NWA had 50 offices.
Pinky Brown and guys like that. But
right.
I mean.
He's right up there, yeah.
You know.
Maybe that's an episode, the Mount Rushmore of bookers. The Mount Rushmore of creative minds.
Yeah, you start getting into like Sam Mushnick's and.
Right.
Jim Barnett's and, you know.
Jim Herd.
Yeah, Jim Herd.
We could do the worst. Who's the worst bookers?
Oh, yeah. I think Jim Herd's pretty high on that list. But, I mean, even, you know, being a good booker is about the era when it happened.
Yeah.
I mean, Cowboy Bill Watts and Dusty Rhodes are great bookers for the time.
Right. Yes.
You know,
yes.
Jim Cornette was great. If I wanted to book an 80s era wrestling show.
Yeah.
For 2014, that doesn't translate as well.
No, you're absolutely right.
So,
Right.
You have to do that by generation, too. And there's only one right now. So
that's right. That's right. We would love to know your thoughts on what if Shane Douglas hadn't thrown down the NWA title. Mark and I probably talked about this subject more in the past month than ever been done in history. Highly recommend to you. It was on our gimmick table, the 1994 timeline with Shane Douglas. Man, it's behind. Let me just say, you know, the whole thing with him throwing the title, that's a small part of that interview with him. But that's our theories. You know, what would have happened? What needs to happen in wrestling today? What could be the modern day ECW? Is Paul Heyman, is he being underused as the advocate for, hey, I don't care what he's doing. If Paul Heyman's on TV, I'm going to watch it. I'm not going to turn the channel.
That's right.
He's going to say, he's going to say something provocative. He's going to say something to keep your eyeballs glued on there. So, DoubleDropKick.com. You can download us on Stitcher, download us on iTunes, download us right there from the website. You can join the conversation. I'm at Heath Mulliken on Twitter. Mark, where can people find you?
At the DDK Show on Twitter.
Go on Facebook. We have a page. You can like it, the Double Dropkick Show. Join our group, the wrestling you grew up with. When we post this episode, we're going to start this conversation of what would happen. What would the wrestling world be like without Stone Cold Steve Austin? I mean, if he doesn't talk to Hank, I mean, what if we're sitting here and that mug ended his career as the ringmaster?
Man. Or what if he just ended it when WCW fired him because he couldn't?
Because his arm, you know, he had a hurt arm.
Yeah. Well, there's a little more to it than that, but
right. As always, it's the Double Dropkick Show. It's the wrestling you grew up with and the wrestling you need to watch now. It's season two. As always, I'm Heath Mulliken.
And I'm Mark Quitman.
And that's it this week, fans. So long for now.
I was sitting in a tub of pudding over here.
Start up.
Yeah, we're going to have to do it over.